everyone. Before we get started, we wanted to let you know about our venue consulting. We have broken up our offerings into four distinct needs: design, sales and client experience, marketing, and those all important SOPs. You can take advantage of one or all of these tricky spots for your venue. If you want to learn more and get a few more details, head on over to hustleandgather.com to see how we can work together and reach your venue goals. All right, let's get to today's show.
I think that relationships in general are like big teachers for us. And I think there's nothing like being a parent to like, and raising a human that's like a huge mirror to yourself of like, oh my God, why am I okay with this for me? But I would never allow my child to go through this or to be that or to accept this. And if, for me, it's been a huge growth opportunity for me to be like, that's not okay for her. Then it's not okay for me. I too am someone's child.
Welcome to Hustle and Gather, a podcast about inspiring the everyday entrepreneur to take the leap. I'm Dana.
And I'm Courtney.
And we are two sisters who have started multiple businesses together. And yes, it is as messy as you think, because we know that starting a business isn't easy.
I mean, we've done it four times. And on this show, we talk about the ups and downs of the hustle and the reward at the end of the journey.
And this year, we're talking with our guests about three important topics in our entrepreneurial journey. Things like team building,
work-life balance,
and how to recover from tragedy, both in business and in life.
We're now in this part of the season where we're talking with some incredible guests on how they recovered after tragedy. You know, when you simply can't separate life from business. We'll be talking about how to handle those unexpected moments and how to grow and move forward through those experiences. Last week, we talked with Don Mamone about the tragedy of not being able to show up as our authentic selves.
So this week, the two of us are talking about the lessons we have learned along the way.
All right. Well, that was such a great episode. I always love talking to Don. I could talk to Don for like hours and hours and hours. You have talked to Don for hours and hours.
I do.
Yeah.
An hour and a half every week.
Okay. So it's just like talking to an old friend.
It is. It is. A lot of similar conversations in some ways.
Yeah.
It's definitely been an interesting journey for sure.
Well, I think like before we get started, it'd be interesting just to even share with our listeners, like what's it like?
So I kind of approached it because we were just trying to get a better footing of how we wanted to show up as like our speaking, our training, consulting. There was things that I didn't like, and we weren't seeing an ROI on the back end of our kind of like talks and whatnot. And so I just felt like we were missing like some key piece in general. And so it really started with, I wasn't really prepared for it, to be truthful. I was just prepared for the time commitment of it, which was definitely a lot of time commitment. But we kind of start with a lot of like creating that baseline of like who we are, where like our kind of biases lie, how we think, stuff like that. And it, really the point of it is trying to unearth that like authentic version of ourselves in personal life, but really just in business as well. Like, what is it that, where's our zone of genius specifically? And there's definitely like a high achiever, right? Someone overachiever, high achiever. My zone of genius has been perceived in many different things. Like you could say, it's this. And so it's hard to kind of narrow it down specifically to what it is that you feel is your zone of genius, but also that you know to be true. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it was just a lot of like kind of working through that, unearthing some things, kind of pushing the way I think about myself, what I think about business, retraining the way you look at that specific business model that we've been going through, like, you know, and how to figure out where the next steps are. So yeah, it's been good. It's been interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
we're going to get a dissertation at the end of it, like a thesis.
I don't know if you get a thesis. I think the hardest thing for me to do is to be real, like genuinely. Mm-hmm. The hardest thing for me is to be unfiltered of what I think and what I feel, because I filter so much of it as probably fear of being judged, fear of like upsetting somebody or even making someone else look bad based on how I feel. Mm-hmm. And so there was this exercise. It was just like free writing.
Okay.
Like free writing of like who you are, basically who you are, whatever. And I did it. I was getting my tires changed. I had like an hour and a half. And so I just sat there and wrote it and did it. And it was just anything that pops in your mind, you just kind of write what exactly like what it is. And I wrote it and I sent it off, and in the session, he was like reading parts of it. And it was like, I mean, I'm an emotional person. Like, if you know me, you know that I'm an emotional person, but it was honestly so heartbreaking to like read some of the things mm-hmm. that like I thought and that I had never put into words or like regrets or just, I wrote about like being a kid and how uninhibited I was, how free I was, and how much I would never ever recognize who I am now. Yeah. Just that, like the amount of boundaries and walls and like things I've put up to just protect that, I guess, that person that was there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it was interesting. They do a good job of unearthing of where you really are.
Yeah, totally interesting. I know. Well, probably your current project, if no one's heard about it, can we talk about this? Like your Medium, your journal?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that probably came from that.
It did.
Yeah. So yeah. Doing a... Dana's a great writer, by the way. You are. Verbose. She's very verbose. Brevity is not her skill, but she's such a good, yes. It's true.
Very true.
She's a good writer. Every time Dana writes one of our speeches, we have to like pare it down by like three quarters. Cause like, there's no way we're going to fit all these words in like 50 minutes. This is a 10-hour speech. She's on Medium writing about the lies that you've told yourself.
Or lies that I have been told. Or right. That I've told
or lies you've believed or yeah. whatever. But I've read the first couple. And they're really good. Mm-hmm. Very deep and poignant. Yes.
Very deep.
Yeah, I can see myself in some of them. So don't take it personal. But, you know, put it out there. Yeah. But I love that. I love that for you. So oftentimes when I'm doing yoga, I've just started this recently mm-hmm. in the last year or so, I have a journal beside me. Because, like, the things just pop up, like, as I'm moving my body and working through things. And I'm like, oh, I got to jot that down. So I think it's a good exercise, like that kind of free writing, like whatever yes. inspires thoughts to get them out on paper. It's cathartic.
It is. It's really hard though. I had to recognize that my experience does not necessarily mean somebody else or something else is bad, mm-hmm. right? There's always been this thing like, well, if I feel this way, then that means I'm saying that this person that did this is bad. So there's a lot of things about, like, I talk about like my childhood, and it's like, and sometimes I'm like, I had great parents. Like they yeah. weren't terrible people. Right. But there's these, and I hope that, you know, it comes across as like, that doesn't mean that they were terrible parents. They were not terrible parents and are not terrible parents, but it doesn't mean that my experience was less because of that.
I'm sure there's going to be some phone calls surrounding it. Just wait, you know, there are.
I don't know if she even reads them.
She reads them.
Oh, okay. Lovely.
How do I know that and you don't know that?
Because she doesn't talk to me about it. They're afraid of me.
Are they?
They don't talk to me. I think they are. I don't think they don't talk to me about shit because they know I don't deal with it.
I think it's good. I love that you're doing that. I think it's such a great exercise and I'm happy for what it breeds on the other side. But I felt a lot of this kind of intertwines with some of that, like the same kind of mentality and coaching. So I don't know if we start with personal, business, or overall, but let's start personal.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
What was your biggest personal takeaway?
It's never easy, but on the other side, it's always worth it. I feel like that's something that I have realized the past year in general. It wasn't a new thing, but I think it's such an important thing to say. And I really loved that. I think for so many times when you have to make a decision and you have to move past something or you have to pivot or whatever, like, oh, it's going to be so hard. It's going to be so hard. But once I get to the other side, it's going to be worth it. It's going to be perfect. It's going to be fine. But I think the point of that is that it's never easy. Mm-hmm. Like even when you get to the other side, it is still hard. It's still hard to be in that space and to not want to go back to where it was before, or it's still hard to, you know, come to terms with the truth of who you are or a relationship or something like that. Like it's never easy. But you could still look at it and say like, this is still a hard step I have to take. This is still a hard path I'm on, but it's so worth it because of what it brings on the other side or on what it brings to you specifically. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of it's, I think peace and really it's just peace. I don't even say joy because I don't even think everything you do is joy, but to me, it's always my, what I'm seeking after is yeah. peace and contentment. And that's what, you know, when I started working with Don and they asked me, what do you want? I was like, I want peace and I want contentment. I don't want to feel like I have to constantly be going, 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 going. And I have to constantly be doing the next thing because I'm so afraid of not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm so afraid of losing this success that I have. And in order to maintain it, I have to be on this board and I have to teach this class and I have to go to these cities and I have to talk this much and I have to make this course and I have to, like, I want contentment and I want peace. I want to know that I'm on the path of growth and I'm not just throwing spaghetti at the wall, which is what we've been doing, I feel like, for freaking 10 years, throwing spaghetti at the wall.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting.
Sounds messy.
It is very messy. Have you seen our office / the Bradford? I mean like figuratively, all of it. It's messy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One, I feel like all of these talks could be like a whole entire podcast, but I firmly believe that I think this on a couple of different levels. Like, one, I think this from the boss perspective. Like, just because something's hard doesn't immediately mean that it's bad. Like, I think that there's like this whole generation, even with our kids, it's like, just because that's a hard thing doesn't mean it's a bad thing. Like, we've equated big effort with bad. Do you know what I mean? And so I think there's like that kind of like renorming in your, that some of the best things actually were really, really hard things. And I think too that obviously personally, and I relate to so many of you know, what our guests are talking about or whatnot, like getting divorced and whatnot, and like kind of going through that transition, like with the kids and blah, 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 like definitely wasn't easy and it's worth it. And even on the other side of it, I have like so much gratitude for where I'm at and so much anger at the same time. Like, it's both and like, it's never easy. Like, I'm still processing, like even in the middle of it, and I'm in a good relationship and, you know, like, it's going well. But then there's even a part of me that like still, I'm like, why do I have to get to know other kids? It's not that I want to be married to Mikhail with my kids. It's not that, but it's like, here I am at this part of my life. Like, this is hard, you know? And like, why is this my life? Like, why is it to like love this person? And it comes with, and just same for me. Why is it to love me? Like, it comes with all of this too, you know? And it's like, not easy at all, but it's like, I'm constantly reassured that it's worth it. You know what I mean? But I think it's just this theme in life. Like, even look back at like the Bradford, like anything big that you've ever accomplished wasn't easy, honestly. Like, no, it didn't just land in your lap. Even when you like look at someone like Taylor Swift, who makes it look effortless, who obviously had some talent, it's not easy. You know, like, she's put so much effort into it. And that effort wasn't bad. Like, it is rewarded her with the life that she wants. But I'm sure there's also that comes with concessions too. You know what I mean? And so I just think that we need to get out of the mindset in general that just because something's hard, it was bad. Because that is just, nothing can be further from the truth, I think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, totally. And I think that's, you know, it's hard to teach your kids that for sure, because that is very much what they feel like, because life is supposed to be so easy. But even just with school and, you know, or with Henry, Ada puts a lot of effort into things and she gets the rewards of that effort. Mm-hmm. And Henry doesn't necessarily get those same rewards. But yeah, we're trying to talk to him about like, this was really hard and you worked really hard, and but it was really good. Like, look what you learned. Look what you accomplished.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it wasn't this A that you wanted or the B that you wanted, but still, like, you've learned how to write an outline, you've learned how to brainstorm, and, you know, you've learned these things. And, you know, trying to find, you know, for the kids now, it's like, your middle school doesn't really fucking matter. Like, it doesn't matter. Their grades don't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, the only thing you're supposed to get out of middle school is how to be a good student so you can be successful in high school.
Yeah, when it does matter. And like a sociable human.
Yeah, but like, so I think when you take that kind of pressure off and say, okay, like, what is it that you can learn from this hard thing that you did? What is it that, how can we view this as a success as much as possible? And so that you feel that, you know, this thing you went through wasn't necessarily bad, but it was a positive thing.
Which, side note, Dana is the best parent for that. Cause she's like a walking after school special. She's like, by the way,
this is what she tell you. Sixth grade is like totally going to break me. I finally was like, you know what, buddy,
the specials are over. Like,
oh, because I think everyone's just tired. I was like, I'm done lecturing you about, I'm done having these like heart-to-heart conversations. Here's the rules. You have a zero. Like, we're not even going to talk about it. You have a zero. You have technology taken away for 2 days for every zero. That's just what it is. Mm-hmm. We don't need to talk about why. We don't talk about it. It's just what it is. Done.
Good.
I'm out of words.
Replay one of those.
I said them all. I know. Do you want me to record it? And so you could just say it.
I know. Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah. So my personal was, I'm not willing to show my daughter it's okay to hide who you are. And I feel like I guess for me, it's more just kind of like that playing small or like becoming a version of myself that's more acceptable to whatever the situation is. You know, like I feel like, you know, the world, and by the world, I mean like my bubble, needs me to be me. And when you play small or like kind of change who you are, your thoughts and your opinions and what you are, find acceptable and not acceptable, I think I like to repeat, Dawn, like it's a tragedy. And I would never want for my daughter to grow up thinking that that's okay. Like, I don't want Nora to ever be anything more than like, because Nora's a big personality too, than her, you know, like big Nora personality self. You know what I mean? And I think that relationships in general are like big teachers for us. And I think there's nothing like being a parent to like, and raising a human that's like a huge mirror to yourself of like, oh my God, why am I okay with this for me? But I would never allow my child to go through this or to be that or to accept this. And if, for me, it's been a huge growth opportunity for me to be like, if that's not okay for her, then it's not okay for me. I too am someone's child. Right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think too, like one of the, like for me, like a turning point in a lot of these past 2 years was also Ada, because Ada is super empathetic and she is a really good people reader for the most part. And so she can recognize like dynamics, and she really started picking up on the relationship I had with my in-laws and how different I was. And she one time we were in the car and she's like, Mom, why are you so weird when you go to Grammy and Grampy's house? And I was like, how am I weird? She's like, well, you're really quiet. You don't say anything. You kind of just sit there. And I do, like, I am like the most untamed version of myself. And I'm not like an overly loud person in general. Mm-hmm. I'm a very opinionated person and I talk all the time. I'm very extroverted. I am not an introvert, but there's not an introverted bone in my body, which my kids think is crazy. They're like, everywhere you go, everyone's your friend. You know so many people. And I was like, well, I do know a lot of people, but yes, I like talking to people. And I was like, oh, well, you know, like, it's just, I'm just not their cup of tea. So I just kind of hang back. Like, I just hold it back. I just kind of survive the moment in a lot of ways. And I could see, and this was like a couple years ago, and you can see as she's getting older, she's trying to become the person that she thinks her grandmother wants her to be. Like, down to things like, Ada has a very specific sense of style. Mm-hmm. And
she always has.
Always has, mm-hmm. her entire life, very much. And she, like, will just, whatever anybody gives her, whatever Sue would give her something, she'd be like, oh my God, I love it, I love it. And she hated it. Like, she just didn't like it. And I was like, Ada, it's okay to say you don't like it and maybe suggest to go shopping together or whatever. Or I could just see her, like, holding back, like, who she is and, like, a comment she'll make. Or, like, I know she's just super sassy and super sarcastic, like, to an insane degree. She's not like that at all. You know, like, she's just not quippy and she's very quiet. And I remember I was like, I told Sam, I was like, I think I'm training her to adjust to expectations of what someone else wants her to be. And I don't really love that. And so I pulled her aside. I was like, hey, like, why are you acting weird? And she's like, well, you know, I just thought, like, I didn't want to like offend them or upset them or whatever. And I was like, no, no, you're 13. You be whoever the hell you want to be. Like, you say whatever you want to say. The only rule is you can't say the F word around your grandparents. I think that's a perfectly fair rule. But other than that, like, be who you want to be. Like,
yeah,
you know, and it was very much that moment of like, oh, well, she's just learning it from me.
I know.
Hey, everyone. I'm Dana.
And I'm Courtney.
We are the owners of Hustle and Gather Consulting. We began our consulting business because our goal is to empower you with the knowledge and the enthusiasm to take those big steps in your business.
We're excited to offer VIP days that provide up to 5 hours of one-on-one time with our team to help you navigate challenges within your business. Whether that's overcoming an obstacle, hiring that perfect team, or taking steps to expand into new territories, we want to help you achieve those milestones.
Head on over to hustleandgather.com to see how we can help you.
So you want to open a venue and have no idea where to start? We've been there too. We are Courtney and Dana, owners of Hustle and Gather Consulting. Over the last 10 years, we have built, operated, and scaled a successful event venue in the competitive Triangle market.
We want for you to learn from our mistakes and profit from our successes. Our venue marketing and direction consulting is for that person who thinks, just like we did one time, you know, opening a venue would be fun. And it is, but it can be scary and very confusing. Let us help you with those first crucial steps like market research, potential profitability, and design concepts, just to name a few. Head on over to hustleandgather.com to see how we can help you.
And I think as women, we do that to our daughters. I think like we are just so naturally adept at like conforming to being like the least objectionable, very people pleasing. Like it's just kind of like, even like growing up in church, it's kind of how we're taught. Like you're supposed to be this demure, quiet, whatever, which is like never been me, but it was me. But then you teach, you unintentionally teach that to your daughters. Like, oh, that's how you are. Oh, that's how she acts. That's how, you know, and it's like, no. Like that's not how we act at all, you know? But yeah, I love that. All right. What was your business takeaway?
My business takeaway is that we are so focused on the fallout, we don't think about the windfall.
I loved that. That was actually my first business takeaway too. I have adjusted.
I think it is so, so true. And it feels so like on point for where we are right now in our business right now. Like just every single time, like we have had to make a pivot or an adjustment. There is so many conversations between me and you about like, what's the fallout? What's going to happen? Like, and you kind of make a mountain out of a molehill, really. Like you're creating this alternate narrative and reality that you're like, oh, this is going to happen. If let this person go, then this is going to do this and this. And definitely there's strategy when you are hiring and firing, for sure. There's strategy there. I don't want to discount that, but it's always worth it. It's the windfall that comes from the back end of it. It's always worth it. And yet we still, even to this day, we're like, oh my God, we don't want anybody to quit. We don't want someone to quit. And I'm like, and finally I was like, why does it fucking matter if somebody quits? Like, why? Because every single time we've had to make a change, that person has quit because they're burnt out. They weren't a good fit or whatever. And then there's been someone that's come in and made it amazing. And it's been such a better experience. So like, why are we always so afraid of the fallout when we know the windfall is there?
I think we're naturally, like humans are naturally opposed to change, like just kind of like talk yourself through it in general, you know, so I think there's just like that inclination to be like, oh, like status quo is what's safe. And there's like, you're always constantly like trying to avoid what's scary, you know, like the unknown is scary, like it could be. And there's just like, I think that's just like the human condition of kind of staying in your safe lane as opposed to edging out to what's scary. But I think that in business, it hurts you. And I think too, another way that I think about it too, when you're making big policy changes and like we've done this with the bar and oftentimes to kind of look at it with like, how can we make this the most palatable instead of like, how can we market it in a way that's different than everybody else? Like you've taken, like we have a really cool bar idea and concept for our industry. And of course, innovation and stuff like that tends to cost a little bit more or whatnot. But I think we've made it like definitely very palatable. We kind of worry about, oh, is this going to be too high? As opposed to like, wow, look at what we're offering you that you can't get anywhere else. I think even in the marketing, we kind of try to make it smaller as opposed to like the big cool thing that it is and getting those clients that would think it's the big, then you're getting the client that's like has that more scarcity mindset and not the one that's like, wow, this is the big cool thing that I've been wanting.
But it's actually one of the things, like the next person that we hire, the question I want to ask is, how do you deal with change?
Yeah.
Like, how do you deal with change and challenge? Because that has been my biggest beef and my biggest, like, really bone of contention with really, honestly, 90% of our employees that we have had in the past and have had even now is change. Like, they're so afraid to change. They're so afraid to try something new and they just get stuck and like, oh, but this works. I'm like, I get that it works, but just because it works doesn't mean it's the best. Mm-hmm. Like, and it is one of the things where my next person that I hire, like I want them to be able to make changes and to pivot and to be able to look at things from a different perspective and be excited about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because we are entrepreneurs, because we had to pivot so much, we had to deal with change and we're used to it. And we've seen, okay, well, when we weren't afraid to make this change, like all this great stuff happened and they just haven't had that experience yet. I have no idea why. I don't know if it's their age. I don't know the psychology behind it. I have no freaking clue, but it is literally the most frustrating thing to me.
It's hard because Bradford's like unrecognizable now. Like the way that we operate and how we do things, it's like not even the same like thing as it was.
Like if we had never pivoted or changed, it wouldn't be what it is.
I know. Yeah. So it's like, but I guess for us, we have the perspective of like, it's been a million changes and that's all for the better, and some for the better, some for the worse, whatever, but it's all been fine. And it's like, maybe they just don't see that. I don't know. To me, it's more about the trust. Do you trust change?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's do you trust and do you respect it?
Yeah.
And maybe to be fair to who, to them and what their life they've been through is, you know, COVID was a big deal and that was a massive change. And that wasn't something that necessarily everyone found was like a positive thing or a good thing. And so I think there is a lot of fear of doing something different and, you know, oh, this is how I've survived. This is how I've been successful. And I don't want to try or do anything else. But it's tough, man. It's just, it's such a depressing life if you're afraid to change.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I 100% agree.
I can't. Yeah.
Well, I think my business thing was kind of similar, was that your brand is an extension of, like, getting back to the marketing. Your brand is an extension of your identity and your marketing is an extension of your voice. Like when you're talking about business, that your brand is an extension of your identity. And I think in some ways that's us, in some ways it's not. And then your marketing is an extension of you using your voice. And I think kind of getting through to that, like, thinking about marketing our bar in particular, like utilizing that voice of like how we really see it and view it, like what we're offering clients, like making sure that that's what's being said.
Yeah, it's as it should be. And it's like, I said, like we were talking about in the podcast, like it's the only way to differentiate yourself from something else. And there has to be this uniqueness for the most part for you to get to the point you want to be. Will you book clients being a lemming? For sure. Will you book the amount you want? Probably not. Like, you know, so there's definitely like that piece of it. But what I struggle with for us is it still our voice?
Yeah, no, it gets harder and harder. Like the more layers you have there, it's much further away from like, I don't even recognize that, you know?
Well, yeah. And that's why sometimes you take a step back and you're like, hey, now, like, this is not how we're doing things because this is what we value. Mm-hmm. Like we value this, you know, like for us, like one of our biggest, and still to this day, our biggest core value is community. And so when the community reaches out and says, I want to do X, Y, Z, we're like, here you go, have it. Like, we'll do it for you because it's our community and it's a rural community. They don't have a lot. This like the nicest place. People will have their eighth grade dance and daddy daughter dance and whatever. And we want to provide that for them.
Yeah.
And we don't ever talk about it.
We don't ever talk about it
on our socials. No one knows that that is a core value of ours.
Yeah.
You know, because that's our voice. It's not their voice.
That's a good point. Yeah. Okay.
Do you know what I mean? And so when you have these, like what you said, these layers, how do you, and this is where we have failed truly as bosses, to be transparent and candid here, is that we have our service statement, we have our mission statement, we have all these things that we tell people to do. I don't know if we have found the people that have embodied it fully. And that love it and that embrace it. Like there isn't anybody that's like, oh my God, I can't wait to work this daddy daughter dance. It's gonna be so much fun. So good for the community. It's more like, who the hell's going to work it? I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
That's not who we are.
Yeah.
It's just not who we are.
Yeah, I know.
My point is that I think that you can, it's a really easy audit.
Yeah.
It's a really way to say, is my brand coming through in my marketing? And I think if you want to say our brand is having great hospitality, beautiful events, we believe in inclusivity, we believe in creating a seamless day. Yeah, that's our brand. 100% that's coming through in our marketing. No question. Like there is it's not so far off. Yeah. There are pieces of it because I think our whole team embodies and has that voice. But there are smaller things that we as owners and as we built our business on, that those small, tiny little voices have gotten lost in the growth, you know, and forgotten along the way. And I think that's what sets you apart. Tell me another venue in downtown Raleigh that just gives their space away for free because the school wants to use it. Nobody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll put that on social. We give our space away for free to schools that want to use it. The girls will love that. All right. Overall, my overall truth that I loved, and I've always said this, is truth is a perception. Like, I don't actually believe in absolute truth. Like even
right.
first person telling, you're still like, I've tried to have this conversation with my father multiple times that like the truth is, even as you're hearing it from a first person, it is still being filtered through their emotion and how they felt about what was happening about it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like it's still very much, even though it can be very close, it's still very much tainted with that person's perception. So I think when you talk about people and you have differences of opinions and you have a different way that you felt about a situation, like I think there's a lot of empathy that can be gained from the fact that nothing's the truth and nothing's really actual, but it's really the emotion of the experience through the emotion that you're bringing to the situation. And I think it allows you to, you know, agree to disagree or come to understandings or really understand a human, the human experience better.
Right. Well, I think it's a healthy way to look at that there is an absolute truth, because I think that when you convince yourself that this is the truth above all else, that when something challenges that truth and maybe it comes out that that truth wasn't real, it's crushing. Mm-hmm. It changes the core of what you are. And this is, I might have mentioned this before, I can't remember, but I was watching some video or something, and it was the guy, I don't remember what it was, but it's a guy who goes to like all these like political rallies, like these Trump rallies, and he asks them a question, and they literally contradict what they say all the time, right? And they're funny, like they're just funny. People are poking fun at the, like, calling them stupid or whatever. And so he was being interviewed about this, and he was like totally like, he's like, you know, I thought that it would be entertaining. And he's like, and obviously it is entertaining. He's like, but what I learned is that what they believe, it is a core of who they are. So whereas you can tell me, like, I can say, hey, I believe the sky is blue. That's just a belief that I have. That's just something that I believe to be true. And you can come to me and say, oh, but no, the sky is this color, this color, this color, all this proof. And then I might be like, huh, interesting that that's the case. But when you believe something to be an absolute truth, it becomes to the core of who you are. Like it is in your DNA. So then there is no way that anybody could ever tell you that you're wrong. And so, and that's what these people, these extremists on either side, to be fair, it is in the core of who they are as a truth. It is their part of their identity. And so they're not going to let you question their identity. They're not going to let you question what, like who they are, because they can't survive it. Because now you're telling them that they're no longer this person that they thought they were. And so they're going to double down. They're going to push back. They're going to keep on believing this truth because they have to, for like self-preservation. Mm-hmm. And it was a really interesting way. And that's how I approach my dad. It is the core of who he is, and yeah. His, in his DNA of what he believes. There is no room for conversations. We don't have them. He knows we're not going to have them. He doesn't try to have them because he can't survive it. When the truth comes out, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah. What was your favorite overall takeaway?
Fear exists and gets to be welcomed. It means you're pushing past your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I just think it's very true. I think it was one of our very first podcasts. It was Bethany Howard.
Yes.
And she's talking about fear as the driver. Mm-hmm. You can have fear as either the driver, they're the passenger, or they're in the back seat.
Right.
And I use that example all the time. I was actually just talking to Ada about it. She plays basketball and she will get these fast breaks and she'll be going. And she's like one-on-one with somebody. And all she has to do is like do a little like crossover and she'll be able to get to the basket, or the person will foul her or whatever. And she stops 90% of the time.
And she passes it.
And or she just takes a jump shot and misses it or whatever. And so we talk about it and I was like, what's wrong? She's like, I'm just afraid. She's like, I'm afraid of it. And I was like, well, and in basketball, she's like, there's a lot of reasons why she does certain things. Like she passes it too soon or whatever. She has that fear, like she's going to make a mistake or they're going to get the ball or whatever. And I was telling her, you know, like fear is good. It means you care. Like we want to have that feeling. I said, but you have a choice of where your fear sits. Is it driving you? Is it determining where, like you have no choice as to what it's doing, whether you're passing the ball, whether you're stopping. Is it in the passenger seat and saying, well, maybe you should do this, and you're maybe listening to them and telling it, but like you still have some control? Or is in the back seat just asking you to turn up the music? Like, you know, like you have a choice as to where it's supposed to be, but it's never going to go away. And then when it starts to go away, it means you've stopped caring, and we don't want to get there. So
Yeah.
Because she was just like, I wish I wasn't afraid. And I was like, that's just life. Like, you have to, if you're doing something you love and that you're passionate about, there's going to be a feeling of fear there because you're afraid to fail because you love it so much.
Yeah. I love that. I totally agree. I mean, I think that there's been many things that we've done in our life that have been, you know, didn't have the answers, and there was definitely fear, and I would definitely say it's pushing you out of your comfort zone, but I love, we accept fear, but fragility, we don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can be fearful, but like, don't let it prevent you. Don't allow it to make you fragile. And I feel this way again, like strongly about like raising strong women, you know, like it's going to be scary. There's going to be scary things. Like, big things in life are scary. Because it means something to you, because there could be failure because it's not comfortable. But that shouldn't make you fragile. Like, don't let it paralyze your decisions, because that's like a life not well lived, you know? But I love that. Like, accepting, we accept fear, but not fragility. I love that. Yeah. So instead of doing like a fuck up of the week, something that we don't like about ourselves. So it's a fuck up of our life. Not the week. It's always with us. I mean, I've come to the good thing about being a co-parent and having a lot of alone time is you get a lot of time for self-reflection because it's just you in your head. So you get to reflect on a lot of these things about your life and yourself and your person. But there's several things that I don't like about myself. And I think I've talked before about like my kind of like scatterbrainness, procrastination type, especially when I'm stressed. I'm very much that way. That seems like the easy answer. I think that for me, it is my ability to catastrophize things. Like, I have a hard time when things are going well in the present to then future cast very negative things. Or like, if something is just like, is just even slightly off and like my nervous system is activated, I will like catastrophize the future to like the nth degree. And then my sky starts falling in the present and I have to like work myself up out of that. And I've dragged people into that before. I'm sure you have experienced this, but I hate that about myself, how it's like, I am not able to like stay in the present. And even though I am very like go with the flow, sometimes I find myself wanting to direct that flow in a negative forecast, if that makes sense. And like, I have to talk myself back down off the ledge. Like, you're fucking up today by worrying about tomorrow and you don't even know. And I tell myself, and how I do this, I'm like, I could go get in my car right now and die. There is no future, right? Like, this is very morbid, but it's true. But it's like, stay here, Courtney. Like, a week from now may not even matter because you could be dead. Like, literally, get a grip, you know? But I hate that about myself. And I do it in relationships, and I do it in our business, and I do it in my life, and I do it with my kids. All the things.
Well, I don't know if I think it's always going to be fine. I just say how I feel in the moment. I know. And then let it go. If I can let it go. If I can't, I can't. I've been better about knowing what I can and can't control. And sometimes you just can't control things. And you just got to let it be. Yeah. I don't know. I have a couple of things. I do think I'm a very judgmental person. I don't love that about myself. But I would say probably the thing that I hate the most is about myself is, and I work on it all the time. I really hate being wrong. And I feel like it stems a lot from the feeling of wanting to prove like myself to whatever situation it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that feeling because I actually know that I'm wrong a lot of the times, and I'm not afraid to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not afraid of it. Like, I don't feel like I learned so much from things that like I'm incorrect about. Right. But I don't like it. And I have to fight against my nature is to push back all the time on things. Even if I don't even know about it. Like, even if I'm just like, I don't know about, but if I don't, especially if I don't respect somebody, I want to prove them wrong more than anything else in my life. Like, no question.
Yeah. I feel like that's one of the things I could have told you about yourself.
Yeah.
Could you have told that?
A shocker.
Could you have told me that? Like, I'm a catastrophizer?
No. I mean, I guess if I was to think about it, I mean, like, I know like right now you're stressing about finances and you're probably like spinning this wheel of like, oh my God, we're going to be in this hole of whatever, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I can see that it's been stressing you out. I think you keep that pretty internal.
Yeah, actually. I do, for sure. But I see it played out in my relationships and whatnot too. And I think that's part of the problem. Like, I'll have a hard time like confronting people or like having a hard time. I've already gone through all the scenarios and how this is going to end in a tragic flaming pile of shit, you know? So I'm like, I don't even want to start the conversation. This is where it's going.
Yeah. But I mean, most of the time you're wrong.
I know. It's true. Most of the time I am wrong.
Like, we had to have this hard conversation and you were like, oh, she's just going to quit. And I was like, I don't think she is actually. And you're like, nope, she is. Give me this, give me that. And I'm like, no.
That might have been wishful thinking. That's different.
Not how that was going to work.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that was so good. I love that conversation. Totally could talk to Dawn again.
Yeah. They're very easy to talk to.
Yeah.
To learn more about our hustles, visit us on the gram at C&D Events, at the Bradford NC, at anthem.house, and at Hustle and Gather. And if you're interested in learning more about our speaking, training, or venue consulting, head to our website at hustleandgather.com.
And if you love us and you love this show, we'd be more than honored if you left a rating and a review.
This podcast is a production of Your Fluence. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Dana.
And we'll talk with you next time on Hustle and Gather.